Stories bigger than Texas, the Alamo Podcast. May marks Preservation Month. Preserving and conserving the Alamo Church and Lawn Barrack are paramount to the Alamo Plan, as well as all the artifacts we continue to uncover that might otherwise be lost to history. Today, we reveal the work being done every single day to keep these fragile buildings standing, the dynamic duo charged with historic preservation, and how their seemingly opposite occupations work in tandem toward a shared and sacred goal. I'm your host, Emily Balcom. We're joined today by Pam Jerry Rosser, the Alamo's conservator, and Dr. Tiffany Lindley, the Alamo's archaeologist. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pam, as the Alamo's conservator, you are charged with keeping the Alamo Church and Lawn Barrack standing for generations to come. What's the latest in that work right now?
Well, there are many projects, many exciting projects. Some of the current projects are the Lawn Barrack Emergency Drainage Project, which is currently, Tiffany is the lead on that. The baptismal conservation treatments. And we are cataloging years of wall loss that has been collected from the Alamo Church and Lawn Barrack. We also have upcoming projects that will be starting in the next 6-8 weeks. And those projects include the annual assessment of the west facade of the Alamo Church, the immediate cornice repair work located at the Alamo Church west facade, as well as roof probe investigation to understand how the current roof is connected to the historic walls.
Wow, that is so much important work you are doing. And we've seen the removal of some moisture monitoring machines from the Alamo Church. What were those machines looking for, and what's next for that project?
So the moisture monitors that were removed, and there are some that are still in place today, they collect the temperature and relative humidity of the interior of the walls at different depths, as well as the soils below grade. And all of that scientific data helps the leadership here work with the team of experts on what is the next best steps in the preservation plan of the Alamo Church.
Because that moisture, that humidity, it's contributing to the wall loss you just mentioned.
Correct. So as the moisture and the temperature is a certain level, then there's salts that are active, and they stay active with the temperature and relative humidity at certain levels. And so as long as those salts are active, then they keep moving within the walls, which causes the stone deterioration and the mortar deterioration.
And Tiffany, as Pam mentioned, you have been super busy with the Lawn Barrack Archaeology Project. You last updated our listeners in January. Where does the project stand now?
We are still excavating. And at this point, my rough estimate is, in an ideal world, we'll be done about middle August. But you imagine there's always bumps and, you know, run into obstacles that you never expected.
The weather.
Exactly. So probably a more realistic end date would probably be late September. But we're working very hard. We're posting every week. So if you know people want to follow along, please check out the website and our social media, both the Instagram and Facebook. We have posts so people can see not only are we finding amazing soil stratigraphy, and the soils are telling us about the use of the space back in the cavalry courtyard, but we're also finding amazing structural remnants from both the original mission period and then also later army use of the space. And then also finding amazing artifacts, just tons and tons of really, really cool artifacts.
And because you're finding so many artifacts, that's what's taking the project longer than expected.
Yes, it's because we are finding so much back there, which is fantastic. We're really helping to flesh out the story of this space. And I think a lot of people can relate to this type of patio space. Think of like your own home where you have your backyard, and when you have, you know, a barbecue, right? Everyone comes over and you're hanging out in the backyard. And kind of think of this patio space as a similar communal area. So there's a lot of domestic use going on and, you know, a lot of work back there. But previously, there wasn't any archaeological work that really explored the entire courtyard. But because of the drainage system and the drainage system, which is definitely needed, it's going to be kind of large. And so we want to make sure that nothing is impacted by the drainage system. So that's why we're having so many units. And as we began to dig, we were just honestly amazed at how much intact soils are still out there and these deposits that tell a huge story of our site.
And as Pam mentioned, you are the project lead right now because it's under archaeological excavation. But at a certain point, I imagine that does transfer, Pam, to your team for the conservation efforts of the Lawn Barrack. How does that interplay work?
Well, Pam and I always joke that Pam is anything above grade and I'm everything below grade. And it's really fantastic because, you know, I'll go in first doing everything below grade and seeing what the foundations look like and can give Pam and her team some insight. Like, you know, for example, for this project that we're on now, as we're digging down and exposing the foundations of the Lawn Barrack, we're seeing the stones are damp. We're seeing roots have penetrated the limestone and have caused it to fall off. It's adding to that deterioration, in addition to what Pam was mentioning earlier about the salts that are inside the stone. So you have all of these, you know, variables that are literally eating away at the structure. So I'm able to look at that and then tell Pam so that her team is prepared.
And Pam, this gives you a lot of research and data to work with before you get started.
Yes, it does. And it was, you know, very helpful and also eye-opening when you opened up that unit where we saw the below-grade wall and saw how damp the Long Barracks walls were, as well as that all those roots that were really just sort of intertwined with the historic mortar and the limestone, and they were just causing the foundation walls just to deteriorate. Like Tiffany said, they could just scrape it with their fingernail and it would just fall away. And so what we're doing now by, you know, adding this drainage system is going to revert the water away from the artifact. Before we started this project, when it would rain, the water would just literally pour off the east wall of the Long Barrack, causing water to infiltrate into the structure. And so this project is going to get the water away from the artifact, and so it will be able to stay drier and not get as saturated with moisture as it has in the past.
And Tiffany, you're doing the Lawn Barrack project, but you and your team also have some other projects coming up very soon.
We have the work associated with the Texas Cavaliers Education Center. So while construction has started on that site, most of that's just been selective demo, some removal of trees, not a lot of ground disturbance. But pretty soon, they're going to get to that ground disturbance. So one of the projects that my team and I will be working on is testing the area first. People think about this, the Alamo site. We know the acequia did run in that area. So we want to see, is the acequia still present? And if it is, how do we preserve that in place, or how do we, you know, add it to our interpretation of the site? If it's not still there due to all of the human activity that came after the use of the acequia, right, then we'll be able to document that as well. So we'll do some proactive work before the construction is even cleared to begin their mass excavation of the pad of the building. And then even when their construction is still going on, we always have an archaeologist present because we need to make sure that nothing is disturbed, nothing is impacted. Because, you know, with archaeology, once something's gone, you can't put it back. So we need to make sure that, you know, we're present. So we have the education center, and then we have more work in the plaza. That's still in the design phase, so I'm not going to speak on that. A lot of our projects we know are on the horizon are still in design phase. So right now, our focus is on the Long Barrack Drainage Project and the Education Center, but lots, lots more to come.
As we said at the top of the episode, May marks Preservation Month. Pam, you literally keep stones together. And Tiffany, you literally dig apart the dirt. Tell us what preservation means to you in your respective roles.
You know, I think about this a lot, you know, working with Pam and learning more about, you know, her role here at the Alamo and then just conservation of structures in general. And it seems that it completely contradicts archaeology. Archaeology is a subtractive science. We take things away. Conservation is an additive science, right? You're adding to preserve. But they actually are so collaborative. So we just maybe call them by different names. So for preservation for archaeology, we are preserving the cultural heritage. Even if we're taking out artifacts or taking out features, we are never forgetting them. That's why we do a lot of documentation and we share that information, because the past does not belong to one person. It doesn't belong to one group. It belongs to everyone. So that's the preservation of the cultural heritage and never forgetting that. But with that said, we do often try to, we find something particularly significant, such as a mission era foundation, will preserve that in place. And we'll work with conservators like Pam and her team on how best to preserve, mostly their stone, these stone features below grade. You know, how are we going to prevent roots from destroying them, soil from, you know, destroying them? So it becomes a very collaborative effort to preserve features in place.
So for me, preservation is part of coming up with a holistic methodology in taking care of this, these two artifacts, as well as the artifacts that Tiffany is discovering, getting them conserved properly to go out on display so then the public can see all of her wonderful finds.
And just so everyone at home knows, when you say the two artifacts, you mean the Alamo Church and Lawn Barrack, because these are more than buildings to you.
Yes, and I would say the artifacts are, number one is the Alamo Church, artifact number one. Artifact number two is the Long Barrack. And so I hope as visitors come to the Alamo site and they are about to walk in to the Alamo Church, that they realize that they are walking through an artifact. And we're very fortunate to have artifact one and two around today for visitors to be able to walk through.
When you are up on your scissor lift, either investigating the front facade of the Alamo Church or inside the baptismal, like the scissor lift currently is right now, what's that feeling that washes over you?
It's exciting. It's, I think, the time for, sounds kind of corny, but the artifact and I sort of become in a one-on-one conversation. So the artifact is communicating with me about how it's feeling. I know this sounds really nutty, but, you know, because I'm able to see up close. I'm about an inch and a half away from the surface of the wall. And so I can see what normal people don't get to see. So I'm learning a lot about the artifact and how, and from this learning method, then I know what are the best steps in preserving it. So to answer your question, because I kind of went down a rabbit hole, I find I'm helping this artifact to remain in place for future generations. And I know if I didn't do it, there would be somebody else here that would be doing what I do. So because it's so important to our city, to our state, to, you know, everyone loves the Alamo and we want it to be here for generations to come.
When I look at the front of the Alamo Church, for example, I see it in its entirety. You see it in how small, minuscule portions.
Yes.
What are you investigating?
So I see it under magnification. And so when I'm looking under magnification, I'm seeing layers of whitewash all the way down to the mission era, where I can see tiny fragments of color that are the size of a freckle. And so with that freckle of color, then I'm able to draw a conclusion that that area of the, whether it be the facade or somewhere on one of the walls, it was decoratively painted with this specific color. I don't know if it was a stencil pattern or if it was a solid color or a band, but I can confidently say that XYZ color was painted on this surface during the mission time.
And people may not realize, but you two share lab space. How does that work?
We're lab mates.
Yes, it's fun. We have the best time.
We do.
Well, we kind of divided the space physically into halves. So, you know, Pam uses one side and I use the other side. But one wonderful benefit is, so Pam has interns that will come in and they're, you know, cataloging wall loss or doing various things. But it's really fun because sometimes, you know, I get to peer over and see what they're doing. And then, you know, in that way, you're, you know, indirectly learning about, you know, Pam's job. So it's pretty exciting.
And then we get to see, you know, what they're doing as archaeologists, because she'll have her team of five in there. And it's exciting to watch them working. They've got their artifacts on their in their little trays and they're cleaning them. And I'll look over and peek and see what they're doing and ask lots of questions. And so it's really fun for our teams to be able to interact with each other. I think we learn a lot from each other's departments.
Absolutely.
And I think we make great lab mates. And then we share equipment, too. I have the microscope, and I'm like, you can use it anytime. I showed her how to plug it into her computer, and she can look at some artifacts that they found, you know, and under the microscope if I'm not available to help.
Do you guys get ideas from each other and inspiration from each other?
Yes, all the time. Mm-hmm. I will say that I was never so excited about mortar until I met Pam.
What makes mortar so fascinating?
It holds artifact one and artifact two together.
That's a great answer. I also remember about a year ago, you were asked to submit a quote about Pam for our employee newsletter, and your quote really touched me. You talked about how you were remembering she discovered something and said, I can't wait to call my mom.
Yes. Yes, I'll
never
forget that.
Her mom is also a very talented historic conservator as well.
Yes, I remember that. I'll never forget that. And then I did not include this in my quote, but after Pam left, myself and the other archaeologists were like, well, that's our new goal in life, is to make Pam squeal. What can we find that makes Pam excited?
And what did you find that made Pam so excited that time? I never got the answer to that.
Oh, it was pigmented plaster on the wall, like literally on the wall. So sometimes we'll find it, the mortar with the plaster or a lime wash, and then it's tinted or pigmented. We'll find that mixed in the soil, so it's at that point have fallen off the wall. But this was intact on the wall.
Wow. In the monk's burial ground. Below grade. It's the coolest thing.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Sorry. I get a little geeky.
This is girl power.
So this is what we do. We're in the lab. Yeah. We're chatting, and we just start, she's telling me things, and we both get all giddy with her artifacts and, you know, with finding discoveries on the walls.
Well, your friendship, your professional relationship, it's very obvious right now. And I understand you've collaborated on a research paper discussing your positive working relationship.
Yes, the Society for American Archaeology annual conference was this past weekend. And this is the premier archaeology conference in the U.S. You have archaeologists come in from all over the world, you know, presenting your research. And so I asked Pam, and she graciously accepted to collaborate. And the paper and presentation was about archaeology and conservation and how it is important to work together and to not be at odds. Often you have archaeologists working, but they may not be collaborating with a conservator. But in our work, we've found that it's mutually beneficial. You know, just as we were talking about, I can give Pam's team information about conditions below grade. She does the same for me. And it's, I think, really important, especially at a historic site like this, where you have significant finds above grade and below grade. You need to have a really good partnership and not just think, oh, well, that's just archaeology, or, oh, that's just conservation. You need to be working together, because that's going to be the best for both the archaeological finds and the structures.
Are there any particular conservation lessons you've picked up from each other over the years?
I mean, I would say just watching her in archaeology, you know, just seeing all the step-by-step procedures that go into each unit, you know, in the stratigraphy and then their findings. Like, it's very methodical, incredibly methodical, and below grade. And I don't think I really took that into consideration of archaeologist. I'm not saying you just go in with a shovel and start, you know, digging, but it was just when I've watched you, I was like, oh, okay. It's very similar to my role as a conservator, because it's very methodical, but it's on the surface. And she's going down, I'm just going maybe like, I don't know, not even a centimeter deep, because I'm on the surface. She's going down 5-7 feet, maybe more sometimes, and finding so much historic data, not only artifacts, but even like the conditions of the soil, which tells us a lot about the how the soil affects the two artifacts. And so I think for me, it's just seeing, like, you're just as detailed in as you go below grade as I am on the surface.
I will say, to your point of how detailed we are, I like seeing when Pam is looking at the facade. And I got to kind of watching her and someone else on her team as they're assessing the facade. It is insane. It's like, she says centimeter by centimeter. Y'all, that's really small. And, you know, to have these schematics of all of the stones and then looking for every tiny spot on the facade, looking at that mortar, is it stable? Is it friable? And then marking it. It's very, very, very detailed. It's a lot of work goes into it. And sometimes I wonder if people, they don't understand that the amount of work that Pam puts into and dedication that she puts into these structures.
Well, and the same back at you. I mean, you put in a lot of time and effort in everything that's going on below grade. And I feel like every day for you, or maybe it's almost every hour, every 30 minutes or every 5 minutes, that you just are given all these gifts all below grade that you're going to share with all the visitors here. So it's like you get to open up. It's like Christmas Day for Tiffany every day below grade.
It does feel like that sometimes. But then it goes back to our partnership, because if we find there are certain artifact types that they need to be conserved before they can go on display, which is the ultimate goal, is that we have artifacts from our actual site, from our soil that we have in our museum. So instead of saying, oh, here's a musket ball that may have been used in the battle, we can say this musket ball was used in the battle, right? But whenever they come out of the ground, they're not in great condition. So that's when I can go to Pam and then I get her advice. What do we do next? You know, how do we preserve these artifacts so that they can go into the museum and they can be enjoyed for all time?
I imagine cleaning something you've taken out of the ground without destroying it is very difficult.
Yes. So the cleaning that we do as archaeologists is very surface level. Depending on the material, it's usually just with water, nothing else, just plain water. And then we'll either use our fingers or a soft bristled toothbrush. But that doesn't get everything off, especially if we're talking about like metal objects. And then any detailed cleaning needs to be done by a trained conservator.
And that's where Pam comes in.
And that's when Pam comes in.
With the Alamo plan well underway and construction taking place all over the site, what are your preservation goals as we work to make the Alamo District a more reverent public site?
For my goal is for the two artifacts as well as the other historic buildings on the site for them to be preserved and conserved in the most holistic method as possible.
For me, because I do enjoy the digging, which isn't so much preservation, all of the materials that we do unearth that we are saving, if those can be conserved in a way and put on display, again, the past doesn't belong to one person. We want to be able to share that with the world. And that is something that's very important to me, is sharing this information and dissemination of our research and preservation of, not just the physical, but again, that cultural heritage.
Yeah, because think about it. I mean, what you're doing right now is below grade that hasn't happened before. And so you're discovering history below grade that no one's seen. And so once you discover it, and then it gets conserved properly, and then it can go out on display, it's all because of Tiffany's discoveries for the visitors to see, which is so exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting.
For you two, every day is Preservation Month. We're obviously talking about it now because it's timely, but it's really important to recognize that there are people who wake up every day thinking about the future.
Yes.
Yeah, and I would say, like for conservation, when we're doing conservation treatments, everything is reversible. So if down the road, the methodology that I'm using now has been the same treatments that I've been using in my over 30 years of being a conservator. And these were methods that I was taught when I was over in Italy. These are the same methods that I've always used. They're reversible. And so should something in the future, they have another, development that comes along with something that's even more acceptable, well, then they can just remove the work that I've done and add the new method.
Yeah. We're only going to dig and remove if we absolutely have to. There's no way around it. But if we can leave something in place, we do. And that even goes for just the excavation itself. We're only going to excavate if it's being impacted by construction. That is best practice in any archaeological excavation. You never are going to excavate 100% of a site because 5 years, and we know how technology is, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, there's going to be someone who has better technology, different methodology, which leads to different interpretations. It doesn't mean people from the past are wrong. You know, other scientists are wrong. It just means we know more now than we did in the past, and that's always going to be true. So, you know, we're always thinking, let's just take a sample size if possible so that there's some for the future, if we can continue to learn.
And both of you are leaving meticulous records for the future. So 50 years from now, 100 years from now, the future Alamo archaeologist and conservator know exactly what you did.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's nailed into not just our brains, but our team's brains, mm-hmm. to the point where sometimes I'm looking over, every archaeologist will take a daily notes. I have to remind them, people will read this in the future.
Pam Jerry Rosser and Dr. Tiffany Lindley, thank you so much for joining us. It is very clear you two enjoy working with each other.
Thank you.
Be sure to check out the podcast notes. We've linked to videos showing some of Pam's preservation projects across the Alamo, as well as the part of the Alamo's website where you can keep up with Tiffany's archaeology projects. And stay tuned to more podcast episodes later this month as we dive deeper into preservation around the Alamo, including the women who saved the Alamo and the many lives of the Lawn Barrack. You've been listening to Stories Bigger Than Texas, the Alamo Podcast.